Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Celeste Stein Show. I am your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and here we cover important news and information on current events taking place on a global basis from a trusted source. We also cover self-help topics and entertainment. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to our platforms on YouTube and bbsradio.com to not miss other amazing episodes. Please stay informed and help us to grow. Now, today we're going to talk about the changing music landscape, and I have just the person who can help us to delve into this topic. He is a Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, musician, record producer, record label executive, music manager, and radio show host. He is a cornerstone of the music world, embarking on his career by penning songs for the group Compunction. He swiftly rose to prominence with the 1986 hit sensation Rumors by Timex Social Club. He is also the mastermind behind Club Nouveau, rising to prominence with songs like Lean On Me, which was nominated for a Grammy and charted at number one on the Billboard's R&B chart. Please welcome our very special guest, the legendary Jay King. Jay, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Just to be clear, we won a Grammy for Song of the Year for Lean On Me.
Yes, that's right. We have that as well. We're going to be getting into some of that in just a second as we talk a little bit about everything that we have going on today. And I just really appreciate your taking the time to be with us here today. I wanted to start by asking you to tell me, where did your passion for the music come from?
Well, ever since I was a kid, there was never a time when music wasn't in our family. I've always had music in my life. My mother listened to a lot of music. My father listened to a lot of music. My cousins listened to a lot of music. There was never a time that when in our family, in the homes, that music wasn't prominent. So I guess the passion, the love of music, starts there. And but if you ask me about being in the music business, I don't think it I think it was by accident and blessing, but it wasn't because it wasn't my path. It's not what I set out to do. It's what happened. And that's why sometimes, a lot of people think that there has to be this path, this whole thing that happens, and that's why you end up. But that wasn't mine. And it's just, but when you are when you're there and an opportunity presents itself, then, and you're ready for it, then anything can happen. And in the case of Rumors, it wasn't my record. I didn't write the song. I was new in the music business. I wasn't some impresario or, not named producer, but I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And I had a good feeling about what I could do with this record as a producer. And the independent process had already, a lot of people give me credit for starting this whole independent process, which isn't true. It was already in motion. Egyptian Lover, Rodney O, Unknown DJ, a lot of guys on the West Coast, a world-class wrecking crew, Bobby Jimmy, these guys had already released independent records. The difference was, I released a record independently nationally, and it wasn't a rap act. It was a singing act. It was a group, and so I think those were the differentiating things. And in the modern record business, nobody had had a hit record to become a national record without major distribution, except for me. So I believe that that's what differentiated me from everybody else. It wasn't hip hop. It wasn't regional, because a lot of the records that those guys released were regional records. Mine was a national record, and it was an R&B song, and it went to number one. And won, I won for 12 Inch of the Year against major labels and everything. and I won for biggest selling 12 inch. So I outsold all of the major labels that year, and even though the record didn't make it to number one pop, it went top 10 pop with major labels trying to crush it. So the major labels was trying to kill the record, but had politics not been part of the equation, Lean On Me would have been a number one pop record, like it was a number one R&B record, and might have stayed on the charts at number one for a couple of 3, 4, 5 weeks because it outsold everybody and stayed on the charts for over a year.
Isn't that amazing? One of the things, based on something you just said, you said that's not really what you set out to do. Of course, I'm curious, what originally did you set out to do if it wasn't music?
Well, when I was in high school, I was a dancer and I played trumpet. But if I thought that I would, and I did plays, I did school plays. So I had a friend named Robert Harris, who was a great athlete. We grew up in Sacramento together. By this time, I'm living in Vallejo. But me and Robert had said that we would go to Long Beach State. He was going to play baseball. I was going to be an actor. And that's what our trek was going to be. But neither of those things happened. So music wasn't at the forefront. I love music. Music always made me feel some kind of way. As a 16-year-old, I heard Marvin Gaye's Here, My Dear album. When did you stop loving me? When did I stop loving you? And that song moved me like nothing before. I mean, like it was just very emotional. Music has always been a very emotional thing for me, where it did something to my spirit. So I always had a special relationship with it. I just didn't know that I would do music as a living.
Right. Well, so was there a particular age that your parents kind of, or even you realized that you kind of had musical ability that may have been kind of a little bit above and beyond what some of your counterparts might be doing?
No, because I don't think I did. I think that I really think that I'm mediocre at a lot of things.
I don't
I
think
just
so.
no, I just no, I just work hard. No, I think that that what I am is a hard worker. So
Yes.
I never had what I thought to be extraordinary music talent. What I had was the fortitude to really take what I did have and churn the greatest parts of myself out of it. So
Yeah.
as a songwriter, you might write 10 songs to write a hit. I might have to write 100 songs to write a hit. So I'm going to write the 100 songs. You may only write 8. So I'm going to write, matter of fact, I'm going to write 500. I'm just going to outwork you. And I think that's where that was my talent. If I had a superpower, if I had a gift, it was I was a hard worker and I was focused. And I understood mechanics and numbers. So the music business came natural to me. So if I learned about manufacturing, like if I knew that if I manufactured 1,000 12 inches, that it was going to cost me $1,290. I knew that those 12 inches were $1.29 each. And if I had to, and if the label was going to cost me $100 for 1,000, I knew that was 10 cents each. So I really was good at numbers. I could tell what it cost me to manufacture a 12 inch versus what the wholesale price was as opposed to the retail, and what my margin was. So I understood margin and the mechanics of business, I think, was a natural thing for me. So I could read contracts and really, in my head, reformulate a contract to what I thought would be better. And I think that was the strength of me.
Well, that's so interesting to me. I've often heard, you have your people like Prince and Michael Jackson. I know Prince played numerous instruments, and both of them really were thought of as musical, geniuses that, really just were there to shine, obviously. But, the work ethic, I mean, it's totally different to me. You know, if you look at the music industry as a whole, that work ethic is just not as stringent as it was back in the day. As you look at some of the artists that we grew up listening to, but I've often heard about people like Beyonce, for example. I've heard out of her father's mouth, Dr. Knowles. He's always like, no one will outwork Beyonce. And that is so interesting that some people don't realize that that is a real cornerstone of being successful in the business, that you really have to work and be a hard worker over everyone else, to really get to the top. And so, and also longevity, kind of sticking to it. I've met a lot of country artists. I used to work for the ABC affiliate in Nashville, so I ended up, really having to learn a lot about country music. And I'd interview people like Garth Brooks, and sometimes as you're around people, you just kind of observe how they are with others. And I remember going to a celebrity baseball game, and he was there, and many of the other great country artists like, Vince Gill and the Judds and people like that, they were all there. But he is the only one that he like actually he would be signing autographs. He would climb up into the stands, like from the dugout, get up there and be like taking pictures with the fans and signing. And he's one of those people, his story was that he worked for many, many years without anyone ever knowing who he was, but he just kept doing what he did. And he would be one of those people. There was a big event called Fanfare, and he would stay there till the he'd be that last one there, still signing those autographs. So that's what we were talking about, in the beginning. He's one of those people. He didn't forget where he came from. He didn't forget that, I wanted to be here signing autographs, and then didn't flip on people and decide, oh, I don't want to sign all these autographs all of a sudden, right?
Well,
So
because he knew that he knew the work. A lot of times, people are, you're fortunate. You get blessed with having a hit record, and you don't have to struggle through it. Artists that play in clubs, and bands, whether it's top 40 or, but just that grind, the Chitlin' Circuit, that they respect the journey. It's a tough journey. So, and that, I always loved Garth Brooks, and he always seemed to be a down to earth person.
And that's the thing too, very, very humble. You will see that, and just really knows how to connect and engage with people. And that's a huge part to me of being what I would deem to be like a superstar rather than just being a music artist. There are people that really stand out and they shine, and sometimes people who are in the business don't realize what it took for that person to get there. They're not really studying like all those components. So it's interesting to bring that up. I have a daughter who has embarked on the music career at an early age, and just the observations of what you see happening in the industry. It has changed so much just during COVID, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and AI. In the meantime, I want to take a quick break, and we want to take a listen to your hit song Rumors, and we'll be back after we hear a little of that to continue our discussion.
Something they had. can't show my face, cause when it comes to rumors, I'm a dead ringer. It seems from rumors, I just can't get away. I bet there'll even be rumors floating around on Judgment Day. I think I'll write my congressman and tell him to pass a bill for the next time they kiss somebody.
Has not heard that song, right? That was one of my songs, you know. I think we kind of came up at the same time, and that wasn't a party you went to that you didn't hear that back in the day. So I'm glad we got to take a listen to that. One of the things I wanted to ask you on that song, do you remember kind of what inspired you to write that song, Rumors?
Well, I didn't. So this is what happened with the song. The song was brought to me, but it wasn't produced. And so I loved the song. I loved what I saw. What I did was I manicured the song and turned it into, from a good demo into a great record. Oddly enough, when I was done with the song, they hated it. They said I changed their song. That I made it worse, that it was better as a demo. But I think it was because they were used to listening to it. And obviously, I knew what I was doing because, as you said, the record, everybody heard it. It was one of the biggest records. It's probably the biggest record of 1986. Mm-hmm. And the show came out in 1986. So it rivaled and then surpassed the show by Dougie Fresh.
Yes, for sure. One of the things I also wanted to ask you as it relates to that, as you reflect on your own career and you look at the music industry as it is now, is there any way that you think you could have achieved the same success today in light of the paradigm shifts that have taken place in the industry with things like the 360 deals and the digital age? You know, if you had to do it all again, do you think you would have been able to achieve the same success?
I think you have a greater chance of achieving the success. There's more avenues. The 360 deal only exists if you sign to a major label. Mm-hmm. But in today's world, being independent is open to you versus when we started. It was, you know, to be independent wasn't even a conversation. You had to get to a major label. That's why these guys would release records regionally, and then a major label would pick them up, sign them to a contract, and release the records around the country and then around the world. But in today's world, with social media, with digital distribution, I had to manufacture 12 inches and 7-inch records. And then I had to deal with the breakage part of it. I had to deal with the return part of it. That, you know, Tower Records or Warehouse Records, they could order 10,000 units from me. And if they didn't sell, they could send them back and not pay me any money. So you had to deal with a lot of different mechanics that you don't have to deal with today. You can make a record today, mix it, master it, turn it into a WAV file, put it up on a platform, and you can get to work. Doesn't cost you any money in manufacturing.
But how important is it to know things like social media and how to manipulate social media?
Listen, I don't care what I don't care what it is that you're doing. When you did it back in my day, you had to know distribution. You had to know manufacturing. You had to know marketing and promotions. You had to have the money to make the record. So, anytime you do any job, any work that you're doing as a business, and music becomes a business when you start making it to make a living. The same way opening up a restaurant or opening up a convenience store. If you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to last in business long. It's the same in the music business. If you don't know what you're doing, so a lot of people walk into this business not knowing what they're doing and not interested in learning the process of the music business, not wanting to read. Now, we didn't have access to information the way these young people have access now. You can go to Google and you can type in, how do I start an independent record label? And there's a plethora of information.
Absolutely.
When we grew up, Don Passman had just wrote The Business of Music, that book. And the book was 1,000+ pages long. And then you know, if you started learning about publishing, if I tell you about publishing, it means absolutely nothing. If I can't explain from an intricate standpoint and make you understand it, that as a writer, as a songwriter, you automatically own your publishing, even if you don't own a publishing company. And the only way somebody can take your publishing from you is if you assign that publishing to them through an agreement. But if I tell you that a song is worth 9.1 cents and half of that song is the publishers, half of that song is the writers, and that makes 4.55 cents on both sides. And of those 4.55 cents, as a writer, you guys have to split it. And based on what you split, what ownership, I mean, I can start talking to you fast about it. And you'll shake your head and you won't know what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah, you have to understand.
My job is to be able, is to make you understand and make you learn every aspect of this business so that as you step into the deep water, you don't drown. And you can get, or you can get in a pool and see if you even like swimming in this water. So I think a lot of times people blame the music business for their inability to prepare. You can't go on a baseball field and decide because you like the game that you want to be a professional. You can't do it in basketball. You can't do it in football. You can't do it in wrestling. You can't do it in hockey. And you can't do it in the music business.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, it's like anything else. You do have to learn your craft and really understand every aspect of it that you can. So is that the major piece of advice you would give to artists aspiring to make it in the industry at this particular point in time? Or is there something else that you think they should really come away with as they listen to you?
I think that, you know, that this is a full scope business, that, you know, it's not one thing over the other. I've heard people say, you know, it's 80% music. I mean, 80% business and 20% music. And that's not true. It's 100% business. It's 100% music. It's 100% performance. It's 100% songwriting. It's 100% singing. It's 100% performing. Your job is to get as close to 100% as you possibly can in each of those areas so that you can be a well-rounded creator. And when people say, you know, I got somebody to do that, that's cool. You should, you know, I can't do all the things that myself that needs that for a company to work, but man, I got to have an understanding of it. So if I have you doing it, Celeste, and you're doing it wrong, I can say, yo, Celeste, you're about to sink this ship because you're not filling out all the sound exchange paperwork. So we can't get money from Sound Exchange. Did you fill out our are we CSAC, ASCAP, or BMI as songwriters? Did you do your did we get did we get our splits right? Did we get our writer splits right? Do we have everything signed off on?
That's the thing. You know, those are things that we kind of got into with our child early on, is making sure, you know, she got signed to ASCAP. Then, you know, when she was co-writing with other people over the years, it's like, did you get your split sheet? You know, making sure that who wrote what, you know, in terms of percentages, is it even? Did you write the whole song and somebody came in, though, with that hook line that was the line that made the song, right? You know, like, it is so interesting, you know, that so many people don't really know all those intricacies that you're talking about with the business. And it's really important, to not be taken advantage of. You've got to really take the time, and it's nice to have a mentor or to have somebody who will take you under their wing and, you know, teach you a little something. But you also have to be pliable in the sense of wanting to learn, not just want to be out in front of everybody, you know, singing a song. It's so much more. That point about it being 100% business, you know, and 100% all the rest as well. Key takeaway, certainly a key takeaway. One thing I also wanted to ask, I wanted to kind of get a little bit into the whole AI, artificial intelligence, and how that might impact the music industry as we know it today. What are some things that are takeaways for you as you're watching that unfold? What is it that you're thinking about it? I would love to just hear more from you on how you're interpreting that, because some of the stuff I'm seeing, I'm just amazed. You know, with song collaborations of artists that are deceased with artists that are living, that they just make from AI. You know, I'm just like, now how does that work?
Well, right now we have to put legislation in place, the same way we had to put legislation in place when it came to sampling. But we have to put legislation in place quicker than we did with sampling, because AI will unravel a lot faster, and it'll get out of control. It will burn a lot faster and get out of control. And then there have to be parameters. That so when you put information in, you from the beginning sources. So if you put a collaboration, first of all, you can't use somebody's likeness or voice without their approval or the approval of the party that has the contract, whether it's a an estate or another company. And then if you use, let's say you took a Beyonce song and a Willie Nelson song and a Commodore song and a Club Nouveau song, and you put them into this AI, into the brain of this AI, and it churned out a song. Who owns that product? Is it the,
Absolutely.
so it has to be from the original source, the originating source. Just like in sampling. So I think we have to put those type of stop gates in place. I believe that sampling, and I mean that AI is great. It's a wonderful tool when used properly. It's a dangerous tool when used wrong. You know, I'm not concerned about the proper use of it. I'm concerned about when Dr. Kildare, or you know, some other sinister mastermind decides to get a hold of it and use it in an illegal or destructive manner. So, you know, artificial intelligence is something that we should look at all the way around, not just in music, not just
Yes.
in but you know, but all the way around,
Right.
and we should be concerned about the possibilities and how it could
Yeah.
be destructive to our industries, and more important to humanity. You know,
Yeah.
it could be dangerous where it could destroy humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I worry about, Jay, is kind of like backing into it. It's not, we never kind of have the foresight to be proactive in terms of how might this impact us going forward. I studied some of that in my strategic communication program, and looking at some of the issues that were likely to arise from AI. But it seems as if, I don't know why we always do this, we wait until there's actually an issue to set the precedent, or to put laws on the books
Well, I
when
think
there's
that's why but I think that's why AI is a conversation right now. And I sit as the president of the California Black Chamber. I'm on different commissions and committees that are dealing with the possibilities of AI in a good in a positive and negative sense.
I mean, do you see any positives within the music industry? You alluded to that, but
No, I'm not. The industry is all positive. I don't see anything wrong with the industry. I don't see bad things. I don't. The industry is evolving and changing because that's what the world does. The world doesn't stay the same. The
Right. Kind of
world
like the
changes.
Industrial Revolution.
No,
There's a time in
listen.
which things start to really roll,
No,
and
listen, but that's not it. The record business has always rolled. The record business has been rolling since the 1940s and 50s. The record business is doing what it's doing. What it's doing now is it's evolving and keeping up with technology.
right,
So
but
the
yeah, technology is, well, the only constant in it, I'll say, is change. It just constantly evolves.
No, because I know, but you're
New
not.
media, new media technology is what I'm talking
Yeah, but
about.
you're not paying attention to the whole process. There was a time when you recorded a record and you had to put it on 2-inch tape.
Right, I
Before you could
remember.
return that, before you could record it, you had to run tones and you had to put the tones on that tape. And if it was at +3 or +6 or whatever, those tones had to always match. And then you could start recording what you were going to record instrument wise. And you had to do it, you had
Add
to
the
have a
track.
click, you had to have a click track and everything. So there was a whole process. So it would take you a whole session or half a session just to get set up to record. And then if you didn't have a buyout on that session where you could keep everything up, which was at $100, $150 an hour, you had to take it down. You had to write down all of everything that you had if the engineer had a half a mix up or whatever. And then the engineer had to come back, set all those dials back to where they were, do the tones all over again to bring the track back up to start all over. In today's world, I can turn on the computer, whatever I recorded, it's already there. I don't have to go back and do tones or mix or nothing. Everything is right there. I could take that session and copy and paste it and make a whole nother session and do something totally different there. So technology, and guess what? It costs pennies on the dollar. It
Yeah,
doesn't
it's
cost as much money to record. It doesn't cost as much money to market. It doesn't cost as much money to promote. It doesn't cost as much money to be on radio because there's so many internet radio stations out here.
right.
If you put a good plan together, guess what? You can break through. Chance the Rapper proved it. There are other artists that have proved, and you don't have to sell a million records or a million downloads in order to be famous now. If you can
Right.
get 1,000
You're so
people,
right.
if you get 1,000 people to contribute $100 to you every year, you'd have $100,000 a year to record music for those 1,000 people. And if you're doing good work and you're making good music, you can grow that number by 5 to 20% every year. So the next year you'll have 1,005 or 1,200 people, or 1,050 or 1,200 people. And then the next year, and just grow it, grow it, grow it. But what it requires is for you to do some work. So I think a lot of times, sorry about that. The wind is blowing.
Oh my!
Yeah, that's, the wind
I didn't
blew.
Think you all got that kind of wind out there.
yeah, we do. It blew it all the way over.
Well,
but
things good. Copacetic now.
Yeah, we good. But you can, but I just, when I hear people talk about the music business, especially older people, and they talk about what the music business isn't and how bad the music is, there's some great music out here. I love Snow Allegra. I love Bane. I love Yeba and Lucky Day and Anderson .Paak and what's the boy? Giveon. There's some great music.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's some outstanding music, at out here, in this game.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I like your point earlier about so many different avenues and ways in which people can get things out. It's just to me now, from what I'm hearing, it's I guess being more creative and really finding your way, your niche, because the field is wide open in terms of what you can do with all these different platforms. And you can put your own stuff out. You know,
yeah.
No, you can't find a record label. Well, be your own record label. Go ahead and you can Google it, find out all the information you need, go ahead and record and put it out on your own platforms. Put it out on Spotify or put it out on TikTok and see, you know, who picks it up. I've seen a lot of artists emerge from platforms like TikTok. So it has been really interesting to watch that unfold. One thing, I'm going to take another quick break. We're going to listen to Jealousy, and then we're going to come back. And I actually want to talk to you a little bit about some of your time in Alaska and just talking about that. So we'll be back in just a moment after we hear a little of the song Jealousy. And as you watch that and reflect, what does it remind you of, or what do you think about when you see old clips like that?
I was super young. The music business was exciting at that time. It was really exciting to me. I was learning a lot, and yeah, with people who get to love what they do as a living are lucky and blessed and fortunate. And I'm a person who got to love what they did for a living. And so I get to, even now, I don't compromise myself for money. I don't, if I don't enjoy something, I'm not doing it. But I have that luxury. A lot of people don't have that luxury, but most people don't know the value of themselves. The value of who they are is what they do. And my mama said, if what you do make you who you are, then you ain't shit. That's what my mama said, and I believe her.
Oh, yeah. Listen to mom.
So I never let what I did for a living define who I was as a person. And but I also recognized the privilege I had at being able to do something that I love to make a living. And I think a lot of people should challenge themselves to be that and to do that, to find what they love. And so, you can work a job, work your job, do that, but also, know yourself, delve into yourself, mind the goal that you are. I think a lot of people chase money. They look for things where they can make money because they don't know that they are money. I am the money. So what am I going to do to mine the gold that's inside of me?
Wow, that's deep, when you really think about that. Yeah, you can easily, money can come and money can go, but you are actually the money. Wow. That's what a point. I wanted to also I mentioned I wanted to talk a little bit about your time in Alaska and how you came up with the idea to create a dance troupe and all of that. So tell me about that.
Well, I had already danced. I grew up, that's what I popped. That's what I thought I would do. I thought I would be a dancer and an actor. So I went to the Air Force after a year out of high school. And so the Air Force took me to Alaska. And then I stayed in the Air Force for a year. And then I got out of the Air Force, and instead of coming back to California, I stayed in Alaska. And I did what was natural to me, which was start a dance group, because that's what I did. I was in dance group. I had my own dance group when I lived in California, so I started one there. What Alaska did for me was allowed me to learn myself in a different environment. Alaska also taught me that I could survive in new territories and make my own adventure. So when people, and I was so impactful in Alaska that people to this day say I went to school in Alaska. They'll say I went to Bartlett High or East High or West High. And there's people that actually tell you that I was in their class. But that couldn't have been so, because when I was in Alaska, I was 19. I was already graduated from school. And but when people ask me where I'm from, I say I'm from Sacramento, Vallejo, and Anchorage, Alaska, because in my life, those were the three places that were the most impactful on my person. And they were impactful and important to my person. I've never been high before. I've never drank. I've never smoked. I've never done any drugs. And so I'm clear and conscious of where I was and what I was doing. For me, Alaska was the first time that I got involved with a political campaign. And Willie Ratcliffe was running for the Senate. He was a black man. And I worked on his campaign, married to a white woman named Mary Ratcliffe. But a guy named Phil Pleasant was the one who really, I really chopped my teeth on politics with Phil Pleasant, and taught me, and he was really like a father to me in Alaska. And Alaska was a wonderful, was such a wonderful time for me that I really believed that I would, that I left Alaska to go do music. And I was going to come back after I made my big splash, come back and live in Alaska, in Anchorage. That's how much I loved it. That's how impactful it was for me. It's just that once I left Anchorage and came back to Anchorage again, I didn't realize how slow it was because I adapted to the rhythm of the city. But to be in the music business is move, move, move. And so, but if there was a place that I wish I could have gone back to, that if I could do it over again, I would have figured out a way to have a place in Anchorage because it was that impactful. I got to say, it's not the beautiful city that it once was. It was very innocent. Even if it had any things going on, they were out of the way. Now, you know, the whole drug thing, the whole other thing going right. down.
Oh yeah. As you were talking a little bit earlier about, the creative process, I wanted to ask you about your own personal creative process and the time that you actually put into developing your music and even your onstage routine. As a lot of people see you up there, and sometimes people think, oh, that's easy. They just get up there. It's like the figure skater. They get out there and you're like, I could do that. That's just so beautiful and graceful. But you try to get out there and you're flipping and flopping, right? So tell me a little bit about what goes into the process. I mean, you've had some longevity in this business, and you certainly can speak on things that others cannot in terms of that process.
Well, I think if you've been in this business for 3 or 4 years, you understand the process of, a show. But when you've been as long as I've been in, you know that there's certain things that people want to see in the show. So a lot of parts of the show don't change. You just, because people want, they hear certain songs, they want them sang a certain way. They want the dance movement that goes with those songs because that's how they see you. They don't want you to change it. It's when you add new things to the show or when you move the show around that you have to rehearse for those things. If you're recording new music, it's a totally different thing than if you're an artist like me, that's a legacy artist, where you're going to basically do hit records that people already know. So you guys want to see, I don't need jealousy. You want to see all that stuff because that's what you see in the videos. That's what you know us for. And that's what we do. As it relates to the creative process, I'm always writing in between something. Sometimes I wake up late at night. I may wake up 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with an idea, and I'll put the frame of it down. And then over the course of days, weeks, months, I may start to fashion that song or that lyric. But I'm always writing. I have music on my iPad. I'm always writing. As a matter of fact, on my morning show, Kings in the Morning, sometimes I'll say, hey, you guys, this is what I'm working on. And I'll play them some music. And sometimes just the basic parts of it. And I'll sing the melody to them, and maybe not even words, just a melody. And then over the course of time, show them how the song developed. The new Club Nouveau record that we just released, in January, that went to number 27 on the charts. Everybody on Kings in the Morning heard it from the time it started off as a track, just music with the tempo slower into an actual song with a video, which is now what we have available to people.
I was going to ask you, did you have to have someone kind of teach you how to write, or did you just have a natural knack for writing and putting those songs together?
You know what? I wrote poetry in high school. I wrote my own plays in high school. So writing a song, and I listened to songs I always loved music. I always read the back of the album covers and see who played on stuff. So I just think that writing for me was a natural attribute, and I think one of my strengths.
Well, I hear, obviously you're still writing and you're continuing in the vein as you always have in the thing that it sounds like you love doing the most of all the things. And I wanted to ask, what do you see your future holding? What are some of the things that you're aspiring to do right now?
Well, I aspire to be alive in full bloom
Tell me about
every
it. That's a good one.
day. So every day. So every day is a different day for me. I think a lot of people live in Groundhog's Day, where they wake up every morning. So it becomes a mundane thing, the whole trip, the whole life thing. I think you have to challenge yourself to make life interesting, and that's what I do. I'm going to probably sing and Club Nouveau for another 4 or 5 years. Probably by the time I'm 60, I'm 62. So maybe 67, 68, I'm done. But Club Nouveau will continue because that's why Jay Ali and Tirza and somebody would take my place. But I'll continue to control the entity. I make bossa nova music, my own music. Probably by the time I'm 68, 69, I'm not going to do anything. I'm probably just going to travel, live in different parts of the world, and just enjoy this life ride. There's only 8,760 hours in a year, and I think a lot of people waste a lot of hours on misery. I'm not married to the world. I'm not in the world like you guys. I'm divorced from the world. I'm married to ideas and possibilities. And so I think that I'm probably strange to a lot of people, probably out of step with the conversation that exists today, because they are there's nothing fruitful in how the world presents itself. And I like fruit.
Hey, I do too, and that is a memorable definitely a memorable statement there. One of the things we're almost out of time here. I wanted to really take the time to thank you for joining us today and remind people to like, share, and subscribe to my channels on YouTube and BBS Radio. And be sure to send me a friend request on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. I will definitely follow you back. As we close out, can you introduce the song we're about to hear? And we're gonna take it out on that.
Now, are you guys going to play It's All Right?
Yes, we're gonna play the
Okay.
current stuff.
Yeah, that's the new one. We have a new single we're working on now called I'm Thankful. But this is the song right now that Club Nouveau has out. Went to number 27 on the R&B charts. The first time in 20 some odd years since we had a record in the charts. We're pretty excited about it and looking forward to the next single. So It's All Right, Club Nouveau. Let us know what you think.
All
It's
right.
available
Thanks so
on iTunes
much.
or wherever you buy your music. Thank you.
That's right. iTunes, you heard that. Or wherever you get your music, make sure you go in and download the music. We're going to go out on this song and we'll see you next time in 2 weeks. Thanks for joining us today, and you guys out there, thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Should you express it when you love someone? Especially if you're broken and you need some love. Yeah.
Should you just walk away and live to love another day? Or should you try to hold? Feel like like you're at home.
If you decide that you're gonna stay, if you decide just to walk away, I'm gonna love on you anyway. It's alright. And if you decide that the pain is strong and it's too hard to keep holding on, my love is gonna be to the bone. It's alright, yeah.
How can you suppress it when you need someone? Especially if that person is a special one. If you know she's a special one.
And your heart wants to stay. Cause love, it don't just walk away. But it's so hard, so say less. Cause love is all, it's just a test. I'm gonna do what I think is best.
If you decide that you're gonna stay, if you decide just to walk away, I'm gonna love on you anyway. It's alright. And if you decide that the pain is strong and it's too hard to keep holding on, my love is gonna be to the bone. It's alright. If you decide that you're gonna stay, if you decide just to walk away, cause I'm gonna love on you anyway.